Good evening. I'm Lainey Welch. We're coming to you live from Kodiak, one of the nation's top fishing ports. And with me on the media panel, are Margie Bauman of Fisherman's News and Alaska Newspapers Incorporated, Wesley Loy of Pacific Fishing Magazine and the Deck Boss Blog. Our moderator is Jeff Stephen, manager of the United Fishermen's Marketing Association, and we'll hand things over to Jeff to get things going.
Thank you, Lainey, and good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, we welcome the candidates and the audience to the 2010 Alaska Governor Candidates Debate. Since 1990, Kodiak has invited candidates to come to Kodiak to talk about a single issue: the Alaska seafood industry. The Alaska seafood harvesting and processing sectors provide more jobs in Alaska than any other industry. And the revenues that derive to the state of Alaska from the Alaska seafood industry are second only to oil. That said, I'd like to introduce, in alphabetical order, the six candidates who are running for the position of Alaska governor: Ethan Berkowitz, Senator Hollis French, Governor Sean Parnell, Bob Poe, Ralph Samuels, and Bill Walker. Welcome, gentlemen. We're grateful and honored that you've come to Kodiak for this debate. Let's begin. Each candidate will now have 1 minute for introductory remarks, and we will begin with Senator Hollis French.
Jeff, and good evening, everybody. My name is Hollis French, and I'm running for governor because I believe the state is at a crossroads in many important areas, including your business, commercial fishing. Fundamentally, I'm here in Kodiak to listen and to learn. I rode over last night on the Kennecott from Homer to do that, to meet with folks on their way here to Kodiak so that I could begin the process of finding out what's on the minds of the people who work in this industry. As your governor, I will continue to listen and learn. And if you only take away one thing from me tonight, let me tell you this. I will establish a rotating group of advisors who are Alaskans, active in the industry, to advise me on commercial fishing policy, to let me know what's important to your industry so that I get an unfiltered picture of what you need and what I can do for you as governor. Thank you.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you very much. My name is Ralph Samuels. I was raised in King Salmon, actually, down the road from Naknek in a fishing community, and I've spent my entire adult life at Penn Air, which is solely dependent on the health of the seafood industry in Alaska. So I'm well aware of some of the opportunities and the challenges that the commercial seafood industry has in the state of Alaska, everywhere from Bristol Bay to Kodiak, all the way down to Unalaska Dutch Harbor and on to Atka. I am running for governor because I feel an urgency to try to make sure that in the next decade that Alaskans have a strong economy in all sectors of the economy. Seafood is going to be one of the most important roles as we move forward in Alaska in an era where oil will run out. The seafood is going to be the most sustainable resource that we have, and we need to make sure that we do the job right. Thank you very much.
Bill Walker.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Bill Walker. I'm Fairbanks born. I lived in Delta Junction, Valdez, now Anchorage. I spent 30 years in Valdez. I grew up in a fishing community. My father was a member of the Alaskan Scouts in World War II and the Aleutians. My mother came to Alaska to work on the Alcan Highway. At 27, I was the mayor of Valdez. I worked on the oil pipeline. I'm running for governor because I'm very concerned about our future. I'm very concerned we're running out of oil. 90% of our income is based upon oil through a pipeline that is two-thirds empty. Alaska has changed fundamentally. Back when decisions used to be made in Alaska by statesmen such as Governor Hammond, Governor Egan, and Governor Hickel, now we have a future that is being made decisions made elsewhere. I, as governor, will take back the future of Alaska, take it back from the federal government, take it back from the boardroom, corporate boardrooms of Calgary, London, and Houston. Thank you.
Governor Sean Parnell.
I want to continue being your governor because I love Alaska and because I love Alaskans. Every day I focus on my priorities, and that's our jobs and our families. When it comes to fisheries, that is, as you heard earlier, the second largest driver in our economy, single largest employer. And our administration has been active in pursuing fisheries policy. We've increased investments in management, research, and marketing. We've fought the federal initiatives and provided written comment when it comes to marine spatial planning, a national oceans policy. You can count on me to be aggressive when it comes to fighting Endangered Species Act listings and critical habitat areas where we don't have a strong enough voice. I want to continue creating those opportunities for Alaskans, for our jobs, and for our families. Thank you.
Bob Pohl.
Good evening. I'm really happy to be in Kodiak. I almost didn't make it today, so glad that airplane got in. I'm running for governor because I think that we need to make sure that Alaska is a place where you and the generation that follows you can build your futures here. I've served four governors over the almost 30 years I've been in Alaska, and I've helped create literally thousands of jobs in Alaska. If you think about the job of governor, it's about running the executive branch, and I've worked in cabinet and sub-cabinet levels for both Democratic and Republican governors, and I know how to get that job done. But I also know how to create jobs. For instance, in seafood, when I was international trade director, I helped expand exports from $1.2 billion to $3.6 billion while I was there. And I really would like to put my skills to work for Alaskans to help grow the jobs that are going to keep you employed and going to keep your kids employed so that we can all enjoy the great quality of life we have in Alaska. Thank you.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to discuss commercial fishing where there's sometimes a shortage of fish but never a shortage of opinions. I've got to tell you that if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to get what we've got. And what we got isn't close to what we need. Look around you and see what's going on in the commercial fishing world. If we don't require some kind of change, boots on the deck, if we don't require some kind of ownership interest, we're going to continue to see a loss of fishing jobs and a loss of fishing opportunities. If we don't do something about climate change and acidification, we're going to see a loss of fisheries and a loss of fisheries opportunities. If we don't do something to change the architecture of the fishing season, we're going to continue to see the uneven flow of fish across the processor floor, and that makes it harder and harder for people to have opportunities and make money doing this. Commercial fishing is a huge opportunity for Alaska, and when we do it right, we're going to make sure that Alaska can be truly independent and self-reliant. But changes are needed because what we've got just isn't good enough.
Thank you, gentlemen. We will now begin the first question and answer session of the debate. Questions were gathered by member groups of the United Fishermen of Alaska and other Alaskan seafood industry stakeholders. First, let's summarize the rules of the road that will govern the remainder of the debate. First, timing lights will be used for all debate segments. A green light indicates that you are free to speak. A yellow light indicates that you have 10 seconds remaining. And a red light indicates that you have exceeded your time limit and that your microphone will likely be turned off. Our timer is Steve O'Brien. Our first hour consists of questions posed to candidates by our media panelists. All candidates will have 1 minute to respond to the same question. We'll begin with Lainey Welch. Okay.
Thanks, Jeff. Looking ahead 5 to 10 years into the future, what do you see as some of the biggest opportunities facing Alaska seafood industry and the biggest hurdles in making it more economically robust?
Yes.
Very good. The opportunities are to put more jobs in the hands of more Alaskans. That's the biggest opportunity, to put more Alaskans to work in the fisheries. That should be our object, to make sure that our children and the people who want jobs can get them on the boats, in the processors, on the beaches, where the jobs are. That's the opportunity. What's the hurdle? The hurdle is to prevent our fish from being caught. Did I say catched? I said catched. Caught and processed by individuals who don't have a stake in our state, who don't have a belief or don't have an economic interest in our communities. What you want to have, of course, is a strong waterfront community where individuals who want to catch fish, who want to work here, have that opportunity to do so. So the opportunity is to provide jobs for us. The hurdle is outside ownership.
Ralph Samuels.
Down the road. Okay, thanks. I think the opportunity that we have is to manage the resource so that the resource grows. We can't start fighting over how we allocate between gear types, between communities, between user groups, until we base everything on science. And science is going to determine how do we have the strongest resource so that in 10 years we will continue to grow. We have one of the best managed fisheries on this planet, and we need to make sure that we keep basing decisions on science, not on politics. Some of the hurdles that we have, the cost of energy, the cost of transportation. For my career at Pan Air, I'm painfully aware of the cost both to ship fish, to ship personnel. When you get out into Kodiak, down the peninsula and down the chain, you have all of these associated costs with doing that some of your competition around the world does not have. And those are the hurdles that we are going to have to address through policy, deciding what the role of government should be, energy and transportation.
Bill Walker.
The vision I would have is value added in every way we can, that we process our fish as far as it can be processed. In Alaska, because of the cost of energy, we send out fish that's partially processed. Other countries finish the processing of our resource. That's wrong. You know, an economy is when you have value added in your state. And a colony is when you send out the resource without all the value added and have somebody else add that to it. We need to have the value added, not just in rural Alaska, in areas that they don't have the job, to create the jobs through value added. I think that's very important. High sustained yield. We need to, our Constitution speaks about high sustained yield. We should have growing returns. We shouldn't be fighting over who gets the last fish. We should be discussing and negotiating how we have more fish. You know, it's the cons is the cost of energy. I mean, it's 20% of the cost of fish processors typically over the state. 20% is the cost of energy, and it continues to grow and grow and grow. So we have got to get the cost of energy.
Governor Sean Parnell.
Thank you. Our families, as Alaskans, don't have opportunity unless we have a sustainable resource. That's priority number one. Greatest opportunity there, I have to agree, is with value-added products. And that's where, under our administration, the Global Food Aid Program is distributing more salmon. And through efforts like Representative Alan Osterman, I'm in this room tonight, to increase the use of herring and salmon for protein powders across the world, that's value-added that we can put on here in Alaska. When it comes to the greatest threat, I think it's the federal government right now. If the new administration is going to overlay marine spatial planning, if they're going to come out with a biological opinion on the Steller sea lion that's adverse to our interests, that's where we're going to have to put up our hands as Alaskans and say no more. But until we have the willingness to step up against the feds when they step over the line, that is our greatest threat.
Bob Pohl.
I think there are tons of opportunities in fishing. The first that I see as a really positive is that the value from the seafood that we're catching is continually increasing. It's about working smarter and getting more value for that seafood. I think international markets present real opportunity, and I think that we need to be doing a lot more direct marketing between fishermen in Alaska and co-ops in Alaska and foreign markets like China. We need to be taking more advantage of the international air cargo airplanes that are leaving Anchorage largely empty going back to Asia, and find ways to connect the internet, your great fish, and that transportation to new markets. I think that CDQs are working really well, and byproducts like wild Alaska salmon oil are adding a lot. In terms of hurdles, I think maintaining that management quality that Andy Anderson, our first commissioner of Fish and Game, established, where the scientists are erring on the side of the critters and the allocation is done by a different group, the council. And I think we got to keep that discipline.
Ethan Berkowitz.
You know, fish policy is never easy. And a fishing future that makes sense to me is a fishing future where you have more Alaskans on the decks of their own boats, where we're processing more fish here in state, where we're adding value here in state, and where we're more in charge of the our fisheries' future. And that means sustainable fisheries, it means better competition with our fisheries, it means doing more to protect the health and the opportunities in our fishing communities and for our fishing families. That's really critical. We see some significant challenges with how catch shares are implemented. We see significant challenges with how we allocate fish, with what we do to make sure that communities are sustainable, to make sure that crews have an opportunity to work their way up and get boats and stay more involved. That's the biggest challenge, because fisheries ultimately is about fish and it's about people.
Thank you, gentlemen. The next question will be posed by Wesley Loy, and the first candidate to answer the next question will be Ralph Samuels.
Thanks, Jeff, and welcome, candidates. Alaska has a longstanding ban on finfish farming. Now the federal government is pursuing a new policy that could encourage development of aquaculture in federal waters around the country. So far, Alaska leaders have shunned fish farming. But I ask you, does a state so dependent on declining oil reserves really have it so good economically that we can afford to shut out entire industries?
We shouldn't be changing the ban on farmed fish, period. We need to make sure that the Alaska brand that has been built up over a generation of Alaskans, that it is wild, it is pure, and it is pristine, that we're going to sell that product. So when somebody thinks of Alaska seafood, that's what they think of first. So I think we push back on the feds. We should have pushed back on the feds on a number of issues, from No Child Left Behind on, and we need to push back on the federal government on this thing. As oil revenues decline, we need to make sure that in the commercial seafood industry, what we have is decisions that are based on science, so that we have more fish, and then we can fight about who gets what. But you've got to have the strong, basic, fundamental biomass, whether it be salmon or pollock or crab, or the arrow tooth, the fish that we can't develop yet, but. On the matter of farmed salmon or farmed fish of any kind, we should keep pushing back.
Bill Walker?
It scares me to death to think the federal government is going to come in and do a farmed fish a project off of the waters of Alaska. I think they would be about as successful as they've helped us with the timber industry in Southeast. I think it would be a complete disaster. I think we have a lot of, our brand is well known, and when you're in a restaurant, you don't eat anything that says, you don't order Atlantic salmon because you know that that's farmed salmon. So the thought of the federal government coming in and doing that, I know that there's projects off of Mexico and elsewhere, but I think that the risk of tainting industry, fishing, seafood is a renewable resource. We're running out of a non-renewable resource. So that would be probably the worst thing we could do, would be to add risk to our renewable. We should be growing our renewable resource responsibly. And you're absolutely correct about the lack of throughput of the oil pipeline. But it's not bringing the federal government into save the day. Thank you.
Governor Sean Parnell.
Wesley, I think you made my point about the federal government and the tremendous threat we face. I oppose, and on my watch, nearshore and offshore aquaculture will not happen. We don't need to be raising Atlantic salmon in Alaska waters. I do, however, support improving our efforts towards a shellfish mariculture industry.
Bob Folt.
I don't support finfish farming in Alaska. I think one of the reasons that value of our seafood, our total catch, is going up is because the brand recognition, the value that's associated with that brand, goes up, and that's because it's wild. So we have to keep that. On the other hand, I love Kachemak Bay oysters and lots of the shellfish that is raised down in that area, and I think we all, and in Southeast, and I think we ought to go ahead and continue to develop that. I think it's more about keeping our brand strong and making sure that the marginal revenue you make on those business opportunities is profitable.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Real Alaskans don't eat farmed fish. And we don't eat farmed fish because it tastes like mush. and because it drives Alaskan fishermen out of business. And our brand here is for wild stock, wild fish. That's what we sell. It's better, and it's better for you. I mean, look what happened to poor Chileans. They invested heavily in farmed salmon. They've had massive crashes down there. It's helping our prices a little bit, but it's not helping their economy. And when you look at the consequences of fish farming done poorly, you're looking at stock dilution, you're looking at disease, you're looking at all kinds of problems. What's that old slogan? Don't mess with Mother Nature. Let's just stick with the wild fish. We got it better. We can do it better. And that's our product. It's Alaska's product. It's not a farmed product.
Senator Hollis French.
The reason our fish are special is because our fish are wild. That's exactly why people want them. And that's what you have to maintain. The threat to the fisheries comes from not from outside Alaska and not from other industries. It comes from threats to the environment. It comes from the possible development of a mine that could put copper in the water that would spoil that fish and make not only the fish from Bristol Bay, but fish across Alaska unmarketable. I was talking to some folks in Southeast just a couple of weeks ago, and they said, copper in the water of Bristol Bay makes our fish in Southeast unmarketable because no one will want to buy the fish then. My view is that you've got to have a clean environment, keep our fish wild, and you'll never have to go to aquaculture. You'll never have to grow salmon in pens the way they're not meant to be grown. We'll have wild fish for as long as we need them, as long as we maintain a clean environment.
Thank you. The next media panelist who shall ask the next question is Margie Bauman, and the first candidate to answer will be Bill Walker. Margie.
How would you resolve the problem of too many boats going after too many fish in a manner that would allow young fishermen entry into the fishery? If you feel that catch shares is Alaska's solution, please explain why.
Thank you. First of all, too many people went after too few fish. Again, I'm always going to err on the side of the fish to make sure that the fish are preserved. I think that's utmost important, that decisions are made based upon science and what's best for the fish. As far as bringing in on catch shares to be, and when I commercial fish in Valdez, it was unlimited entry situation. I was a young crew member on the boat, and it allowed us to get into the business. I think for the critical thing we have is for the young people to be able to get into the business. We do have revolving loan funds. We have ways that they can borrow money to be able to earn and buy into the business. They should be easily transferable within the family. I think that there has to be some regulation of some sort so that we are not in the situation that we're overfishing, that we are hurting the returns by overfishing without some sort of regulation. Mandated by the state, not the federal government. Thank you.
Governor Sean Parnell.
I think we're all going to be in agreement here that sustainability is the key when it comes to too many people chasing too few fish. When it comes to preserving opportunities for future generations and for entry, I want to make sure that we have the ability to buy into these fisheries. And so as a state, I'm looking for ways to promote financial investments by people and providing loan programs and incentives to bring people into these opportunities. But secondly, when it comes to cruise shares themselves, we have to be careful that we don't unduly burden the boats. And so I do support the pilot program to look at how we can make it work, because it is a complicated issue when you've got folks transferring boats and the like. So I would move carefully, study how it works in a small pilot program, and then move from there, make decisions based on that.
Bob Pohl.
Rationalization in most fisheries has actually been successful at making the fisheries safer, making the fish that are caught a higher quality, gives the boats time to do fillets instead of surimi. It's worked on a number of levels, and it's put the supply out over a long period of time. But like all big changes, they also have unintended consequences, and one of those is in Kodiak, where you're starting to see the community that is directly connected with that resource being separated from that resource. And I think that's where catch shares for crew members come into play most dramatically. And so what I would support is looking at community shares. so that fishing shares get connected with the communities so that there is that direct connection between the community and the resource offshore. I don't think that we should see people just get grandfathered in and move to Palm Springs or Maui and come up here for the 93 days and catch crab and that's it.
Ethan Berkowitz.
I think we start from the premise that people should be free to fish and free to go broke. That's the way it's supposed to be. And when I hear people talk about rationalization, I understand there's some difficult transitions in the fisheries world with globalization and new technology. But I've seen rationalization in this state act as a way for downsizing and outsourcing to take place. Downsizing fleets, downsizing jobs, and outsourcing profits. And that's not the way to move forward for Alaska. I think Bob Poe's correct. We need to do more with communities. We need to do more with CDQs, with CQEs, with community quotas. And I think we need to explore the opportunities under Magnus and Stevens for regional fisheries associations. That's how we start to make sure that the fisheries stay here in Alaska and so that young Alaskans have the opportunity to move forward. Obviously, you do things like loan programs and training, but it's about the structure of the industry that matters most significantly.
Senator Hollis French.
Thank you. It's a great question because what it asks and what it puts in tension is competition versus quality. You always want to reward the hard worker, the early riser, the person who hits the docks and gets out there and can work harder and smarter and tougher than anybody else. That's what we value as Alaskans, what we value as Americans, are people who can do the hard work and get ahead. What's in tension with that is quality, whether that produces a quality product that can be sold for a reasonable price. And we've taken steps in the legislature to promote investment in boats that give you, for example, the salmon product tax credit that lets you make investments into icing, into refrigeration, into better gear that lets you handle the fish better. That delivers a quality product that rewards that hard work, that rewards the person who gets up first in the morning and hits it hard. So, and of course, as you all know and as other people have mentioned, it's when you take those cat shares and award them that the rubber meets the road, and that's where you need a fair allocation process.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. It's tough going last, I'll tell you. I'm going to tend to agree with what the role of government would be to make sure that the young people, the question was how do you get the young people involved in the fishery, to make sure that they have access to capital, to buy equipment. The tax credits is good. And the last one that I'd like to bring up is education, not just for fishermen itself, but for the seafood industry as a whole. There's a lot of young people that I know where I grew up that don't want to really get into the seafood industry as a whole because I think that's the slimline job. If you're 17, 18 years old, that's the slimline job. There are tremendous opportunities in the seafood industry in this state. Even if you set aside being a fisherman itself, there are tremendous opportunities. There's room for advancement. If you can become very good at the technology which will be needed for value added into the management, whether it be marketing, whether it be the operations of a processor or a ship, there are a lot of opportunities if we can provide the educational opportunities for a lot of young people in coastal communities.
Thank you. We will now have another round of questions posed by our media panelists, and the first candidate to answer this next round is Governor Sean Parnell, and Lainey Welch will ask the first question.
Okay. Processing shares are granted in only one U.S. fishery, Bering Sea crab. They're no longer allowed for any other fishery under the Magnus and Stevens Act. In 2 weeks, the North Pacific Council will consider awarding up to 30% of rockfish harvest privileges to processors in the Gulf. Some of these companies are foreign-owned and so will not be able to fish them, so the harvest privileges will likely be leased to fishermen. This will set a precedent. Do you feel this is good policy for Alaska's fisheries?
I support the cooperative trawl fishery move that's being made there. When you're asking specifically to processor shares, as you mentioned, that's something that's never been done. And the question that immediately comes to my head is, under what circumstances should that happen? In other instances of rationalization that have occurred, there's been situations where the fishery's been under stress in terms of management, or where there's been safety issues, where the capital's been stranded, where there's not year-round fisheries. These are the kinds of questions I'm asking today, and I'd have to say that at this juncture, given what I know, I would say no to that particular question you asked.
Bob Pohl.
Processor shares are a problem, I think, in the crab fishery, in the king crab fishery. And a 90-10 split in that is problematic, and I think that ought to be adjusted considerably. I would be very cautious about processor shares in terms of rockfish. I think that it's much more important that the fishers have the shares. On the other hand, I do understand the importance of wanting that processor to invest onshore and be here. So I think that there are things the state can do in terms of possibly tax breaks or loan support or other kinds of support to encourage that processor to be available, because I know if the processing isn't there, you can't market the fish. But processor shares, I don't think they've worked so well in the king crab fishery, and I don't see how they're going to help, particularly in the rockfish fishery.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Maybe I'm looking at this too simplistically, but harvesters are the ones that are supposed to catch, and processors are the ones that are supposed to clean. So that's how I would see this happening. You look at the structure of an industry, and one of the things I'm automatically concerned about is what the economists would call vertical integration, and that raises the specter of antitrust issues. If you have the people that control the product from catch through processing, it's very difficult for people to enter that fishery, and that, to me, is a hugely problematic issue. If you believe, as I do, that competition is good, this seems to me, on its face, to be an anti-competitive move.
Senator Hollis French.
I would have to learn more before I expressed a firm opinion on the question. The issue is going to be decided by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. The governor has an enormous role in appointing those members, and that's where you need a person who can you can trust to make good appointments. And I would point to some of the appointments that have been made in the last year or so to different boards, different positions that may lead you to question whether that's going to happen under another Parnell administration. You have to have top quality people who are balanced, who have a worldview, who are educated, making these decisions when you entrust them with these difficult decisions. That's the kind of process you'll get if I'm elected governor. You'll get quality people making quality decisions.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. I understand how we got here with processor shares, but I certainly don't think we should expand it into other fisheries until we've got some time to see how things go. So the specific question on rockfish, I'd say no.
Bill Walker.
I'd have to say my concern about what's about to happen is I'm always concerned when you have too much control and too few hands. And I think that's a concern that we have in our state and other areas of natural resource development. I hate to see that happen in fisheries as well. I have to say I'm not well versed on that particular issue in this topic, but my gut tells me too much control and too few hands is not a good thing for the state.
Thank you. The next media panelist to ask a question will be Wesley Loy, and the first candidate to answer the question will be Bob Pohl.
This is a mining question. The proposed pebble, copper, and gold mine in headwaters of Bristol Bay has drawn huge attention in recent years. But other lesser-known projects also are in the works. The Donlin Creek gold mine, that's along the Kuskokwim River, and also a coal mine proposed on Cook Inlet. From the beginning, Alaska has been a state that depends on resource development. So again, I ask you, do we have it so good economically in Alaska that we can afford to simply say no to these projects?
I like the way you posed that question, Wesley. I believe that what we need to do to create an Alaska that the next generation of Alaskans can build their future here, is to develop and diversify the economy while not killing off oil, using that economic cushion that oil gives us to move forward. And I know a pro-mining position in this town is not a particularly popular one, but as governor, I would be a straight shooter with you. So I do think that mining can coexist with fishing. It has for the entire history of Alaska. Pebble, I want to say, a 900-foot tailings dam above the richest fishery in the world is a non-starter to me. Absolutely not. And, you know, the mining companies that want to extract $500 billion in resource out of Pebble need to pay their way. And I think that that's on state land, and we can tax them like oil. And I think they should pay their way like oil if they're going to – if the risk has to be commensurate with the reimbursement to the state.
Ethan Berkowitz.
I don't support Pebble Mine. I supported Red Dog. I supported Fort Knox. And there are mines that make sense. But the premise of the question ignores the fact that the process is broken. And Frank Murkowski broke the process several years ago when he gutted the Coastal Zone Management Program. And Coastal Zone Management enabled local people to have a meaningful say in development projects in their own backyard. That's a principle. And it's not a question of whether we can afford it. You can always afford your principles. What you can't afford is to give up on principles. And this, to me, is a fundamental question. For me, the value I have is we're not going to trade a non-renewable resource for a renewable resource. We're not going to give up fish or the risk of fish for the prospect of small dollars out of a mining venture. That doesn't make sense to me at all. And this is a question of principle. It's a question of feeding people I think the premise is a little bit off.
Senator Hollis French.
You know, there should always be a mining industry in Alaska, but there must always be a fishing industry. You cannot eat coal. You cannot eat copper. You cannot eat gold. And that's our job, is to maintain those renewable resources. And we have some breathing room. The question presupposes a need to develop new resources right now. We have $12 billion in savings because we passed a tough oil tax in 2007 and got a fair share of that non-renewable resource. I'm proud of that tax we passed. I'm proud of how we've handled the money. We've socked away lots and lots of it to cushion us into the next phase of our economy. We can be careful. We can be cautious. We don't have to take huge risks on Pebble Mine. We can do it right. And it's because we have been tough with the oil industry and smart with the money.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. As governor, I'm not going to trade one resource for another. If there's any doubt whatsoever there's a risk to the fish, then you don't build the mine. It's as simple as that. But that being said, I don't think you can turn your back on development opportunities that may exist. You don't know yet. I'd like to see what the people at Pebble have to say. And there's so much smoke being blown on both sides of that issue from TV ads and ads that come out right now that I don't think anybody knows what to believe. When they apply for a permit, if they can't prove 100% sure that they can do it correctly, then we won't give it to them. The economics in my hometown, in Naknek, they have a big, beautiful high school that is half empty. And I have a lot of friends there that have half their home values that they used to have there because their economy has slid. So to take away some opportunities like that, I think it is short-sighted. You don't ever trade the one resource for the other. But I don't want to kill it on day one.
Bill Walker.
We are a resource state. When we became a state, we received 103 million acres from the federal government, and we are a resource state. We are a resource development state. The most often question I have gotten in this campaign is this on Pebble Mine. Where do you stand on Pebble Mine? You know, and I've been a process person. I think people are getting tired of hearing, let's stay the process. Let's see what the process turns out. My concern is this. We have, our state is torn apart on that issue. There's not much middle ground on Pebble. It's on one side or the other. An application hasn't even been filed yet. You know, most of what we know is based upon on media. You know, I will say this. If we put head-to-head a renewable resource is fish and a non-renewable resource is mining, I'm going to err on the side of fish. I'm going to err on the side of renewable resource. I want to know the facts. I want to get away from the media, get away from the media hype, and get down to the facts and find out what it is. What, you know, we are running out of, I mean, 90% is based upon one two-thirds empty pipeline. We need to continue to develop our resources in our state. We need to do it responsibly, but not at the expense of each other, not at the expense of renewable. Thank you.
Governor Sean Parnell.
I'm glad we all agree on this principle that, and it's a principle I stated in a speech several months ago, that I also, as a guiding principle, will not trade one resource for another. Our Constitution requires your governor to be true to a process that allows for concurrent use of our resources. We have a permitting process that is designed to have public input and foster public input and to foster science. And I have been a part of DNR when the science and the public input has said, no way. And DNR and governors have said no to projects. So at this point, I am going to stand up for the permitting process that we have as a state and say that as a guiding principle over that process, that I will not trade one resource for another. I will not jeopardize the sustainability of our fisheries for one resource. Thank you.
Thank you. Our media panelist, Margie Bauman, will ask the next question, and the first candidate to answer that question will be Ethan Berkowitz.
We have rules and regulations in place to assure that Alaska's fisheries are protected from any pollution related to oil and gas and mining ventures. And yet we've had a number of environmental incidents where the rules either weren't followed and or monitoring was lax. Why do you feel this happens and how would you fix it?
You know, I'd have to look at it incident by incident, but, you know, I spent enough time in Juneau to hear the argument that we can get rid of the monitors and the observers that the state employed because the industry is going to take care of itself and do the right thing. And I imagine our friends over at Broken Pipes at BP might challenge that. They might wish that we had insisted on observers up on the North Slope. They might have insisted that we had state inspectors. So we can't forsake our responsibility as an owner state, as a sovereign state, to make sure that the resources are developed in a way that's clean and consistent with all of the values that we have. So, you know, it's tough to say without knowing the specific incidents that you have in mind, but as a general principle, we have a responsibility as an owner state to make sure that our resources are developed in a way that's consistent with all of our values.
Senator Hollis French.
You know, I worked a dozen years in the oil industry before I went off to law school and educated my way out of the oil industry into the state senate. I started off as a bull cook on an oil rig north of here in Cook Inlet and worked my way up to being a production operator and then went to the North Slope and spent 8 years up there at Kuparuk pumping 300,000 barrels of oil a day down the pipeline. And I can tell you what happens and what goes wrong is that industry gets too close to regulating. The upper management gets too cozy with the government officials that should be overseeing them, and you get a relationship that builds up that's unhealthy, where one side is reluctant to call out the other because of some relationship or friendship. You've got to be tough with the industry. They are there to make money. I appreciate that, but if you are not willing to stand up to them and say no, we're going to do it differently, then you're going to be taken advantage of every time. I know the industry, I can stand up to them, and they can't put anything past me.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. I think every instance is going to be a little bit different. The balance that the government has and that the governor will have is try to balance to make sure that the regulators are doing their job and that they are actually being tough. In the industry, the aviation industry that I'm familiar with, they rotated the regulators in there just so you didn't have those the chummy problems that you have with a particular company or a particular management person. And that would be one thing you could look at. That the flip side of that is you don't want to have somebody, the bureaucrat in there, who's so worried about their job that they become this over-regulating person on everything, and you've got an overburdensome government coming in there. And as governor, you're constantly trying to balance that to make sure that the environment is protected, and that the regulator isn't coming in, you know, with guns blazing for an agenda that they might have had because they got fired. And I could tell you a lot of stories about regulators coming, I mean, into the private sector or out of the private sector where there is an axe to grind. I think rotating the regulators through the various industries helps tremendously. And other than that, it's a case-by-case basis.
Bill Walker.
I've become increasingly concerned over the years that the revolving door between the oil industry and the state of Alaska employees back and forth and has rotated both ways. That's a very dangerous scenario that we find ourselves in. I'm a strong believer in stakeholders being involved in the process. I've been fortunate to be involved in following the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the creation of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, and I see members in the audience, Al Birch and others, Mead Treadwell, that were involved in that as well. That's when the stakeholders were empowered to sit down and funded by industry to have science versus science rather than dollars versus opportunity. You know, it's not that I don't trust the oil industry. I trust them to do what's in their best interest, and they do it very well. We have to make sure that we have stakeholders in between them that are not in the position of having a job with them as soon as they're out of office or had a job with them before they came in office. We need true stakeholders involved in the process from day one, very beginning, not after there's a disaster. Thank you.
Governor Sean Parnell.
I'll tell you how you deal with oil spills, because I've faced several as governor. You come down tough and hard on the oil industry. As governor, when aging infrastructure at Prudhoe Bay falls apart and oil gets loose, I called my commissioner of DEC, I called the head of BP, told them to get their act together, and I got people on site. The same thing just this last week, just earlier this week, when it came to the TAPS line as well, we had folks on site. When it comes to, one of the candidates spoke to standing up to the industry, we're actually suing BP for losses sustained by the state from several years ago, from another loss due to this aging infrastructure. So the bottom line is, a governor has to be willing to pick up the phone and move and go to court if necessary to resolve these kinds of issues. Because there's no place in this state for these kinds of releases, and there's no reason for them to be happening.
Bob Pohl.
I worked at DEC for 2 years under Governor Hickel, and know a lot about the people that are there, and they're very good, competent people. It's really critical that you have a strong commissioner of DEC who will take action right away and shouldn't just rely on the governor to sit on him, although it's good you did. The other thing I did is led the fight against Exxon to protect the Spill Response Fund. And the state has the right to go in and clean up if industry doesn't. And that's really critical, because it's basically, look, you either do it right or we'll do it for you, and we'll hand you a bill that you really won't like. And I think that's how you respond to industry, because industry responds to costs. Make it expensive for them. Make their mistakes expensive.
That concludes. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that concludes our first round, and we are at a point now for station identification, I believe. Is that right, Lainey? And we're going to take a 30-second break, and we identify ourselves with KMXT, or... Okay, we're taking a 30-second break here. Should I throw in a factoid? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay, welcome back. If you're just joining us around the state, we are coming to you live from Kodiak. This is the Alaska Governor Fisheries Candidates Debate. And we will now pass it back to Jeff Stephen, our moderator, and we'll get into the second hour.
Well, thank you. Before we resume, we would like to recognize and thank our industry sponsors for this event. We would like to thank the Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, the Alaska Scallop Association, Trident Seafoods, the Marine Conservation Alliance, and the Kodiak Island Borough, and of course our sponsor, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce. So we're back here on the second hour, and welcome again. We have a few minutes here. We're just a tad ahead of schedule, and so we have a few Alaska seafood factoids just for everyone's general edification here. The Alaska seafood industry is the largest employer in the state of Alaska. You've probably heard that before several times, I'm sure. And it provides over 60,000 harvester and processor jobs throughout the year. If Alaska were an independent nation, it would place ninth among seafood producing countries. And Alaska commercial fisheries represent over 60% of the wild capture fisheries in the United States. So those are just a few factoids to keep in mind as we work ourselves through the second hour here. Thank you again. And now back to business. We will now have two rounds in which each candidate will pose a question to the candidate of your choice. And we will start with Ralph Samuels.
Okay, question for Bob Poe. Fish byproducts. What can the state do to incentivize more fish byproducts to make more money for the state and the industry?
Well, I think fish byproducts like salmon oil, fish meal, really have a market now in China. I've been to China about 8 times in the last 4 years, and I can tell you that they're very interested in salmon oil as an example. But I think we might think of other byproducts like flying fresh pink fillets to China as backhaul on those empty air cargo jets leaving Anchorage. I think there's lots of opportunity like that. So the other is I think that CDQs ought to maybe work with the new processing facilities that they've developed, work with organizations like the company in Juneau that is doing Wild Alaska Salmon Oil, and maybe prepare a pre-development paste or something that can be processed into that salmon oil, which would keep those facilities open maybe another month, processing waste, trimmings and waste that they froze while they were processing the rest of the product.
Bill Walker?
Parno. Given that the seafood industry in Alaska is a heritage industry that has millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure that's needed to replace the aging, some of the aging infrastructure we have, why have you seen fit to cause to be provided to the company of Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips potentially $20 billion of subsidy to take Alaska's gas into Canada rather than creating using some of that same money to replace aging infrastructure in the fishing industry?
I like answering a natural gas question instead of a fisheries question on this case because, frankly, I support every effort we can make and do to commercialize Alaska's gas. And if that means creating an incentive for the private sector to work and do the project, whether it's designing a pipeline to Valdez or whether it's designing a pipeline through Canada to the lower 48 or whether it's about designing a pipeline to Fairbanks, I support moving Alaska gas to Alaskans and to markets beyond in any way conceivable.
Governor Sean Parnell.
I'm going to pick on my longtime colleague, Ethan Berkowitz. In the legislature, Ethan, you voted against a resolution where we asked the federal government to give us Alaskans more say in Endangered Species Act listings and in critical habitat areas. And I'm just kind of curious how, as a Democrat, would you defend Alaska against burdensome initiatives and endangered species type actions, which constitute overreaches by the federal government?
You got some good researchers there. I don't even remember the resolution. And it's got to be about 15 years ago. But what I tell you is that what you, one of the first things you do if you want to combat endangered species is you reinstitute the Alaska Coastal Zone Management Program, because that's an opportunity for us to use the local people to weigh in against the Endangered Species Act when it's inappropriately applied to Alaskan initiatives. And, you know, as for being a Democrat, well, you know, I'm an Alaskan first. And I think part of the problem we have in politics today is you see too much of this pendulum politics. Which party is going to be in power? Is it going to be the Republicans or the Democrats? And we've got to stop swinging left and right, and it's time for us to start moving forward. And that's the kind of change I'm going to bring when I get to Juneau.
Bob Poe, you have the next question.
Well, I'm going to pick on Ethan as well. In a lot of your literature, Ethan, you talk about making Alaska a more independent place, and you talk about, you know, if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you're getting. So specifically, what would you do to reach that goal of being more independent?
Thanks for that question, Bob. There's two focuses that I'd like to bring to bear. The first is energy, and that's the one I'm going to talk about right now. The second is education, because it gets a little bit of a short shrift in a political campaign. But I think we can do so much more to be energy independent than we're doing. When you look at what's going on here in Kodiak, where once everything gets operational, you're going to see 80 to 90% of the power created locally by the hydro project and the wind project. That's phenomenal. That's an incredible degree of independence and self-reliance. And we can have that across the state. We've got 100 villages that could do well with wind. We've got the 90% of America's tidal potential. We ought to be leading the way on this. The opportunities for Alaska to be leading the way in energy independence are huge. And those are opportunities aside from the hydrocarbons that we tend to focus on. It's part of being able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We can do more than just a gas development plan.
Ethan Berkowitz, you have the next question.
But, you know, I've listened to a lot of these questions over time, and one of the favorite questions I had for fisheries was, name the 5 species of Alaska salmon. So, Sean. I'm actually not going to ask that question.
I'm writing them down, Ethan. They're right here.
But you're free to answer it if you want. Looking back over the decisions you've made regarding fisheries, if you could do something differently, what would it be?
That's a great question, because I think we have done some incredible work when it comes to investing in management and research. For instance, when the Yukon River areas were struggling, we proposed and put in more $1.1 million in new research and management funding there for Western Alaska. We worked with the legislature to increase funding of fish and game. And we've also increased funding to ASME for seafood marketing. So when I see what we could do differently, I see huge opportunity for Alaskans in the future when it comes to fisheries. But I think we're on a positive track right now.
Senator Hollis French, you have the next question.
Thank you, and I'll ask a question to the governor as well. And you mentioned the future of Alaska fishing, but I think the future of Alaska fishing is threatened by Pebble Mine. And we put some money in this year's operating budget to fund an independent study to see if our rules and our regulations are tough enough and strong enough to protect our fishing and the livelihood of thousands of people who depend on that. My question is, yes or no, are you going to allow that study to go forward?
I love the way legislators want the governor to roll out his capital budget, you know, through 2 or 3 weeks beforehand when it comes to appropriations, and I'm not going to do that tonight. Instead, I'm going to tell you about this appropriation. The legislature appropriated $750,000 to the Legislative Council, and they asked, and they said this is for a study, an independent study for everything. Is basically, it's for Pebble Mine. And the question is for the governor, is the permitting process adequate that's in existence? And do we want politicians making decisions on permitting processes like that on specific projects? So just because every politician can get an appropriation to do an independent study, are we going to add that extra layer of review to a permitting process? So the answer is, we'll find out sometime before June 9 as I roll out the capital budget. But I am weighing the benefit of the legislature on the one hand having that information, and on the other hand, maintaining the integrity of the permitting process.
Okay, thank you. We will now begin the second round in which each candidate poses a question to the candidate of your choice. And we will begin with the first question will be asked by Bill Walker.
I'll also ask this of Governor Parnell. The energy cost in rural Alaska is so high that they can't do any value-added processing in rural Alaska. They can barely keep the lights on. There is power cost equalization for the businesses, for the home, but not the businesses. So having said that, and the goal is to, on a renewable resource, to have value added, how do you justify your veto of Senate Bill 305, again, giving a $20 billion subsidy for jobs out of state on a non-renewable resource, when in fact we should be doing that for in-state jobs for renewable resources such as fisheries?
Bill Walker, do I have a microphone on?
No.
Testing, there we go. Bill Walker is referencing a veto of a bill that I made that decoupled oil from gas taxes, meaning that they would be taxed separately. The bottom line is that was an increase in taxes from where we are today on the oil industry. I believe that we do not raise taxes in this time when the state has $11 billion in budget reserves. I don't think we raise taxes on an industry, whether it's fishing or mining or timber or oil, when we're in the midst of an economic downturn. So I vetoed that bill because it represented a tax increase.
Governor Parnell, you have the next question.
Bob Poe. Turning to my left. Do you support the numerous federal initiatives coming out of the administration, such as marine spatial planning and the National Oceans Policy?
I probably don't support marine spatial planning. I don't know how fish know the borders. And I think that just brings in a lot of extra control that really isn't going to help Alaska be more successful. I agree more with what Ethan Berkowitz said a little while ago, which is that we really do need to bring back coastal zone management. I think it helped get local involvement in marine and coastal issues earlier on, helped avoid problems, really, and gave a local voice to these kind of issues.
Bob Poe, you have the next question.
Well, I've got a question for Bill Walker. Bill, in a number of these panels, you, of course, are very focused on a gas line from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, and I've kind of proposed a different version, a sort of Alaska gas hub in Fairbanks. But my question to you is, who will own that line from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez under your scenario, and how specifically do you plan to pay for that?
That pipeline will be owned by the people of Alaska, the same people, the 138,000 people that voted for an all-Alaska line in 2002. The benefits would go to the people of Alaska. It would be financed on the long-term sale contracts in the marketplace. I spent time with Tokyo Gas and Tokyo Electric. It's the very same way all the other LNG projects around the world are financed and paid for. They're paid for by the purchaser of the product. It's like a commercial office building. You build, the tenants pay for it. So it does not become an obligation of the state of Alaska, but for the equity piece of it, about 20%, it's paid for by the customers. The same way as the project in Papua New Guinea, Ras Laffan, Gutter Gas 1, 2, 3, and 4, Gorgon, Australia, they're all financed the same way. In many of those, the governments own the infrastructure so they can control the timing of it, and they don't allow the decision to be made on the development of their resources by third-party interests who have competing projects elsewhere.
Ethan Berkowitz, you have the next question.
Returning to fish, this is a question for Bill Walker, and it's mostly because Sean very deftly avoided answering the question I asked him, which is, Bill, since you've fished before, what criticisms would you have for the Parnell administration about its fish policy?
When I commercial fish, I was in my senior year of high school. I was called out onto a seiner that somebody got injured, a friend of mine in high school, and I went out and I was there probably about a week, and it was one of the most enjoyable times of my life, just getting away from pounding nails for my dad for free to actually fish in Prince William Sound. You know, I don't have any my concern about the Parnell administration on fish is that there's too much politics in the fish management. You know, when decisions about opening and closures go all the way as high into the governor's office, I want the person who has the most knowledge of fishing making the decision about an opener and closure. The guy with his boots in the stream doing all the observation of where the fish are, get the politics out of fish decision regarding fish and put it back in the hands of the people who are most knowledgeable about the fish science and biology.
Senator Hollis French, you have the next question.
I'll ask a question to my friend next door to me, Ralph Samuels. And it's about the CDQ program. The CDQ program's had some great successes. Last year, the Coastal Villages Region Fund broke ground on a $35 million plant out in the YK Delta. It's going to be the third largest employer in that region. It's a real beacon of hope and opportunity and jobs in a depressed area in the YK Delta. Do you see, I mean, that's the upside of the CDQ program. Do you see more upside to the CDQ program, or are there some downsides as well?
Yeah, thanks, Senator. I think all in all, the CDQ program has been good for the state, although like any government program that allocates, it's not a completely fair program. I think a lot of people in this room and in this community itself would probably agree with that statement. That being said, all in all, I think the CDQ program has been a successful way of spreading the wealth to some of the smaller, poorer communities of this state. It's not completely fair, but all in all, I think it's been a good thing.
Ralph Samuels, you have the next question.
Oh, how about Ethan Berkowitz? Ethan, as Alaska moves into, and we were talking generationally, the next generation of Alaskans will have less oil that pays all the bills of state government right now. And as production declines and the state will learn to do with less, what will you do with seafood industry in particular if you have to deal with smaller budgets? What do you do to try to face that or to try to rectify that problem?
That's an interesting question, because the seafood industry has faced smaller and smaller state budgets for a long time. I was leafing through my garage, I'm a pack rat, don't throw anything away, and found an old report from about 6 or 8 years ago which bemoaned the fact that fisheries management was in decline in terms of funding, that the research was in decline. We've got to take the money that's generated through the fishing industry and use it to support the fishing industry. I think even though there's prohibitions in the state constitution against taking money that's in the general fund and dedicating it, I think the importance of the fishing industry and the value that it brings to the state is so significant that the investments that are the revenue that comes from the fishing industry should be used to support the growth and expansion of fisheries.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. That moves us into our next round. And in this round, each candidate will ask a question, one question of another candidate who has been previously chosen by lot. And we will start with Bill Walker.
The candidate I chose by lot is Sean Parnell. Since you turned my fish question into an oil and gas question, I got to ask one more time. When you vetoed 305, and I will quote co-chair of Senate Finance, Bert Stedman, he said, by not separating oil and gas taxes under AGIA, we will be potentially paying the producers $2 billion a year to take the gas off our hands for a period of 10 years. That's $20 billion. The question to Commissioner Galvin from Senator Stedman was, why would we do that? And my question to you is, why would we allow a system to be in place that we would be paying them $2 billion per year to take the gas out of our state for into Canada, Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips?
Let me respond to that question by first addressing a statement you made earlier. Fish openings and closures are not made by me or my office and never will be. They are made by Board of Fish decisions, and we need to keep them in those boards and not residing in me. Secondly, I made very clear why I vetoed that bill. Every analysis done by Commissioner Galvin showed that was a tax increase in that bill. That's why I vetoed it. Pure and simple.
Our next question will be asked by Governor Sean Parnell.
And I drew Bob Poe's name. Bob, one question I have for you is, how would you propose to sustain and increase fisheries participation in the rural Alaska communities and by rural Alaskans?
Well, I think the CDQ program has worked really well. And I think that's an important start because you really have significant organizations now and communities investing in those communities and getting some real value from that. But the other key thing is buying permits, buying shares, leasing shares. And I think we need to really look at our loan programs and other financing that makes it available for Alaskans to have access to those shares. We can't prevent folks from out of state buying those permits and buying those shares, but we can have programs in the state that have Alaska preferences. And so I think that is really an important one, and I think we do need to look to rural Alaska in many ways to make those kind of funds available.
Bob Poe, you have the next question.
My question is for Ralph Samuels. Now, Ralph, you've talked about how you voted against AGEA, and voted against ACES. What would be your vision for what we should be doing with that 90% of state government that does come from oil and gas?
What would you have to explain
the
fisheries question? Explain the question on. Do you want a gas pipeline? Or?
Yeah, well, actually, it was open because 90%. What we're saying is that fish is an important part of our economy, but 90% of state government still comes from oil and gas. And so one of the things you've talked about is those positions you've taken on oil and gas initiatives. So what would you be proposing?
I think as you look at the economy as a whole and you're looking at the economy in 10 years rather than this year, you know, Hollis talked a minute ago, we have $10 billion in the bank, and if the price of oil goes to $40, you will be through that thing in 2 or 3 years, and that's the problem. The goal is to get more oil in the pipeline while still getting some money. You have to get to balance the investment that companies make, and it's the same in any industry. You want the investment that comes in there that helps develop a resource, whether it be fisheries or oil or gas or mining or timber or a cruise ship or whatever it is. You want that investment made. And at the same time, you want to get your return, and that's the balance we try to reach. On that particular issue of ACES, I thought that we overreached. I thought that balance wasn't reached. We did what's really good for government. And if the decline at Prudhoe Bay steepens from 5 or 6% to 10%, which seems like just a little bit, in 5 years you'll have half the oil, and it pays for 90% of the bills. That's the discussion that should be taking place. It's really why I want to run for governor, is I want to have the discussion on the economy of Alaska, not this year, but in a decade. What kind of Alaska do you want to see, and what do you want from your government?
Thank you. Ethan Berkowitz, you have the next question.
Thank you. This question is for my friend Hollis French, and it's a fisheries question. What is your proudest accomplishment as a legislator regarding commercial fisheries?
Learning something about the business. I came to the legislature as a West Anchorage legislator, and I got a position on the Labor and Commerce Committee that took up many of those issues during one of the years when we were forming task forces to look at the difficulties in salmon pricing. And we began to craft legislation to stimulate the salmon industry to look for ways to make the boats work better, to put more jobs in the hands of Alaskans. One of the great success stories is the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit. I bet half the people in this room have used that to fund improvements to your boats to get some recompensation for the money you invest to make your business work better. It was a great idea then. We've reauthorized it every 2 or 3 years since then. We did it just again this year. And the feedback we get is very positive. It's those kinds of things where government can help you invest in your business and make it work better with a little bit of capital credit and some good legislation.
Senator Hollis French, you have the next question.
And I drew Ethan Berkowitz, my colleague. The collapse of the Yukon River salmon runs have caused great hardship in that region. The causes are not completely understood, but many people point to high bycatch out on the high seas. What improvements could you suggest to those fisheries to enhance the runs of salmon up the Yukon River?
The tragedy of the Yukon River is because those are subsistence fish, and people's way of life is built around them. And we need to make an extra effort when the subsistence fisheries are implicated in anything. The caps that were set by the council, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, came down from a bycatch of about 130,000 Chinook several years back, which exacerbated the problem, the intercept problem. And they put a hard cap of about 60,000 fish, and that ought to help. But we've got to do more with better gear, with better practices. So we're not chasing salmon at the same time we're chasing pollock. We can have better nets that allow salmon to escape while you're gathering in pollock. And those kind of changes need to be made. Some of this can happen if we have an assistive observer program that makes sure that the best practices and the best gear is used. And I think that since the cost of this gear is important or expensive, there ought to be some kind of assistance in terms of acquiring better gear.
Thank you. Ralph Samuels, you have the next question.
And I drew Bill Walker, and it's a fish question. And aside from ASME and the funding for ASME, how else should the state promote Alaska seafood, and what efforts will you take as a governor to increase exports and the marketing of Alaska seafood?
I think Alaska needs to become much more aggressive in the Asian marketing of our seafood products. You know, we used to have much more aggressive offices located around the Asian market, which we don't have now. We need to make sure that people are aware of I think we do a decent job with that. I don't think it's funded sufficiently. I think there's more that we can do on that. I think direct marketing is good. I think that, it's well known. I mean, it's well, across the nation. So what happens on openers in Alaska is our fish is flown around to different parts of the country and featured in restaurants, and that's wonderful. I think there's more we can do, but I think we need to take the resource, the renewable resource of fish and continue to grow that. And marketing is a piece of it, but we've got to put the next generation in. We've got to put the next generation of fishermen in there, and we're not seeing that. So I think we need to do more of that and not less.
Well, thank you. That concludes that round, and now we move into the third and last segment of our debate. And in this segment, all three of our media panelists will now ask a final question of all the candidates, and each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the same question, and we'll start with Lainey Welch.
We've talked a lot tonight about how the fishing industry is the state's number one private employer. It generates revenue second only to oil. Alaska produces over 60% of our nation's wild-caught seafood. It seems that the industry has to battle for attention and funding in the Alaska legislature. What can the industry do to get the respect it deserves?
Oh, sorry. We'll start with Governor Shaw Parnell. I apologize.
I'm sorry, say that again. No.
The question.
I start off with the answer.
Yeah, you start. Yes, I'm sorry.
It's a fact of life that the fishing industry is underappreciated. And in part, I think that's because of population centers not being commercial fishing communities in terms of the large population centers. And so it's a fact that I think we can change through better awareness. But frankly, from an administration standpoint, this is about electing a governor who's committed to our coastal communities and to thriving coastal communities and to the jobs and families in our coastal communities. I've already demonstrated that and how we've promoted Alaska seafood marketing by increasing funding there. We've increased funding for research and efforts at Fish and Game. We're going to continue to fight the federal government's overreaching. And the bottom line is, if we can continue to work to build a sustainable fishery and thriving communities here in Alaska, I'm not sure that respect comes, from who we are as a people and whether we have those jobs and families taken care of. Thank you.
Bob Pope.
I take your point, Lainey. I think it is true that the fishing industry does not get the respect it deserves. And, you know, it's often we hear, you know, about paying taxes in Alaska, and I think we all know deep down inside we actually have a pretty good tax environment for Alaskans here. But the one group that does pay their way, that really does pay taxes, is fishing. And I think that story, on top of the employment story that you've brought up quite a bit tonight, is that you pay your way. You can't open a commercial fishery unless the funding is there to do the assessments, to know that the stocks are there to allow the fishery. And you have regularly stepped up and paid your way. I think the reason that you don't get the respect you deserve is because you're widely distributed across the state. There's no central concentration. You're busy working, not hanging out in the benches in Juneau, lobbying legislators. I think your legislators from fishing areas do a pretty good job, but they have to confront Anchorage and Fairbanks and other non-fishing areas.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Yeah, this is about people. I mean, I think fishing, people go to sea, are some of the bravest people I know. I mean, it is incredibly dangerous out there. It's incredibly backbreaking work. It's incredibly difficult to work inside a processor day after day with all that machinery and all that fish. And I think we need to convey to the Alaskans who don't understand what it means to participate in the seafood industry how much of an effort goes to putting food on our table and money in the state coffers. And that's what it's about. You know, I'm just sort of thinking about my own brief experience commercial fishing. I'll just never, ever, ever forget how joyful it was the day we sank a net. I mean, that's something I will always remember. But I also remember watching boats sink and how dangerous that was. We've got to make sure that more Alaskans understand what it means to put your life at risk just to put food on someone else's table.
Senator Hollis French.
Thank you. I think you earn respect through personal relationships and through trust. And this event is one of the ways you do that, by bringing us to your community, by bringing us here to Crab Fest, by us having the opportunity to walk down to the docks, by me having the chance to ride over here last night on the Kennecott and talk to a dozen people there as we got on the ferry in the lounge there as we whiled away the hours watching Homer go behind us. And you find out through individual stories, through individual lives, what the business means, how you inherit it from your father, and how you intend to pass it on to your children. It's those relationships that build trust. It can't be manufactured overnight. But by you inviting us here, by us coming to learn more about your community, that's how you do it. And I commend you for that. I commend you for bringing us here. It's been a great experience so far, and I'm looking forward to spending the day here tomorrow.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you very much. I grew up in a fishing town, Lainey, so I have the ultimate respect for fishermen, for crew members, for people that work in the canneries, for the owners of the canneries, for the entire industry. It has fed me my entire adult life. Commercial fishing has fed me. That being said, the governor of Alaska is really like governing five states. The problems that they have in Ketchikan, I described this to my friend in Ketchikan, who was a legislator, said, when I went door to door at my district in Anchorage, people talked about gang problems. If you had a gang problem in Ketchikan or Kodiak, you'd have four guys in a fishing boat, and you wouldn't have a gang problem anymore. And reaching out and making sure that you understand the issues in Kodiak or in Naknek or in Dutch Harbor, and making sure that the legislators from various regions state walk a mile in your shoes. Right now, you guys are all out there, and you've got six guys from Anchorage up here. And as you go to the ballot box, you know, try to vote for somebody that you think has walked a mile in your shoes and that understands your issues. And as far as increasing the education, is reach out to the individual legislators and invite them down here and kind of show them what you do.
Bill Walker.
You know, when I got out of college, I had a decision to make. I had saved up money from working on the oil pipeline. I was either going to buy a limited entry permit or I was going to buy a commercial building. And I was so infatuated with it, the excitement of commercial fishing. I just enjoyed it immensely, even though it was for a short period of time. I bought the commercial building. Many times I wish I had gone with the limited entry permit. You know, I think the fishing industry has respect. You don't get the attention that you deserve. That's the problem. You know, we look at some industries that say we aren't going to do anything until we get fiscal certainty in our state. Where's the fiscal certainty for the fishing industry? You see your prices go up and down. You see there's no control over the investment that you make in getting into the industry. The hurdle rate is very, very high. You know, I think it's wrong that those that are involved in the renewable resource business, you know, the heritage industry of the state, don't get the attention. I certainly hope you get the respect, but you clearly don't get the attention. You know, when I'm in the halls of Juneau, I don't see your lobbyists. I mean, you have wonderful lobbyists, don't get me wrong. There's a growing presence of influence of the non-renewable resource in this state versus the renewable, and I think that it is a matter of educating people. And this forum is absolutely incredible.
I mean, excuse me, red light is on. Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Governor Parnell.
I think
I'm sorry. We're starting another round here. Wesley Loy, you will ask the next question, and we will begin with Bob Poe answering the question.
Thanks, Jeff. You know, I would admonish the candidates for being entirely too nice in this debate. So I'm going to bring up a really nasty issue, maybe an unsolvable issue, but here goes. You know, Cook Inlet is Alaska's most popular fishing hole. And this has spawned perennial conflict between commercial fishermen, sport anglers, dip netters, and subsistence users. Do you see any solution to this bitter allocation fight? Do we just declare one of these sectors the winner and be done with it? What do we do?
Can I get the microphone, please? Okay. We definitely don't declare one sector the winner. I think we do have changing contention for the resource. And that is that you have sport fishing, you have personal use subsistence fishing, and you have commercial fishing. I think the most important rules to follow are still the same rules that we've had in fish and game since the very beginning, which is that we manage our fish stocks scientifically, and we use other groups to allocate the fish stocks. So I think we just have to adjust as people are adjusting, because that's really what's going on. That's the most important, is to adjust as people are going on, but to manage it scientifically. One last point. It's very important that the science that's evaluating the commercial stocks also be the same science that's evaluating the sports stocks. To separate that is to cause a real conflict.
Ethan Berkowitz.
You know, I was up in the Mat-Su Valley the other day, and somebody asked me a question like this, but from the sport fish perspective, and he said if I promised him more fish, I'd get his vote. Anyone out here take that up? No. I thought I'd troll with that one. One of the things we can do is, it's my understanding that there's no bycatch limitations for Chinook in the Gulf of Alaska. And if the intercept problem was a problem in the Yukon, it's a problem in Cook Inlet. And I don't think anybody's going after bycatch, but I think we need to make sure that the rules and the regulations and the practices are in place to minimize bycatch, because that doesn't serve anyone's interests. I'd like to see that happen. I think that when you do that, you can have – there's always going to be a little bit of a rivalry between commercial and sport, and that's just the way it is. There's competition for allocation. But healthy stock is the way – healthy, well-managed stock is the way for both groups to get as much as they possibly can.
Senator Hollis French.
You bet. The answer is balance, balance, balance. You are always going to have allocation issues there in what is essentially a crowded fishery with many user groups. And the job of the governor is to make sure that the Board of Fish is balanced between those two competing interests. If you get too far one way, you're going to have fish wars, and fish wars are a difficult thing to live through, let me promise you. So the idea, the animating idea has to be that you put sound people on the Board of Fish who are going to make those tough decisions. I've been trolling for king salmon off of Anchor River for 10 years, and that's got to continue. But you've also got to have the chance to continue to catch fish for the commercial, the small commercial fisheries, the set net sites all up and down that beach. Both are equally valuable. Both have a place in the future of Cook Inlet fish as long as you have a balanced board.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. You base your decisions on science, whether it's the Kenai River or Cook Inlet or Naknek or Southeast or wherever. You base your decisions on science to manage the resource to get the most fish coming back. And that's at the end of the day. No, the direct question was, do we just pick a winner on this thing and throw the other one out? No, we do not do that. You will have an allocation issue in Cook Inlet and the Kenai River this year. Next year, you're going to have one in 10 years. But you keep making your decisions as a politician. You make your decisions based on the science, and then you have a fair board of fish that decides the allocations.
Bill Walker.
I would pick a winner, and the winner would be the fish. If the Constitution talks about a high sustained yield, that's what we need to focus on. We need to look at growing the resource, not fighting over who gets the last fish. So I would pick a winner. I'd pick fish. I would, you know, it is science, science, science. If someone wants to make decisions not based upon science, I question their motives. And so it's to get the best science available, make sure we're making and that we're growing the resource, and stop fighting over who gets what piece of it. But grow the resource, follow the Constitution. High sustained yield.
Governor Parnell.
I think we found an issue we all agree on. Sustainability, number one. Allocation decisions should be made by the Board of Fish. And it's the governor's job to appoint a board that has that statewide perspective. And so what I've done at this point is we now have, with the appointments that I've made, we have three people who have been identified with the sport community, three people identified with the commercial community, and one person identified with subsistence. But that's who they're identified with. That's perception. What I'm asking of the people who apply to be board members is, can they take a statewide perspective? Can they be true to the sustainability principles found in our Constitution? That's how I'd approach it. And that's how I do approach it.
Thank you. Margie Bauman will ask the next question, and the first answer will be provided by Ethan Berkowitz.
There's a growing concern, Ethan, about number of fishermen who hold fishing permits, but they don't actually fish them. They have crews on their boats that fish these permits, or they lease the permit out. And can you tell me how you feel about a requirement to ensure that the owner has to be on board, and why you feel this way?
I believe in boots on the deck, and I think that's the way it should be. And if you can't have boots on the deck, and there's occasions where that can't happen, there has to be a strong owner interest in the boat. I understand that a lot of people profited when we privatized the public resource and are enjoying the benefits of that. But I think if we want a sustainable fishery, if we want healthy coastal communities, we need to make sure that people who live in the communities benefit from the fisheries to the maximum extent possible. And the shorthand way of saying it, and I'll say it over and over again, is it's got to be boots on the deck.
Okay, let's see. Senator Hollis French.
Thank you. I agree with the general thrust of Ethan's answer, but you obviously want people working those shares. You want people working the permits they have. But it's a property right as well. If it's something that you've acquired, if it's something that you own, if it's something that you're letting perhaps your son or another family member work for you, you've got to be cautious before you work as a government to take that away. You've got to be very, very careful and respectful of the money that someone's invested in that permit. And so my view is that while it's the ideal situation is to have someone working on the boat who owns the permit. Before you step in and take that away, you've got to be very, very careful. That's something that someone's worked hard for. They've acquired it. It may be a family member or a relative that's working that permit. And before you take that away, you've got to make certain that you're doing the right thing. So my view is, obviously, it's most desirable to have that permit worked by someone that owns it. But it's not something you automatically revoke, because it's not.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you. I think you have to be careful about about having the permit become just an equity vehicle that somebody invests in, and all they're doing is hoping that the value goes up and they'll just lease it out and let somebody fish for it, even if they break even on a lease or their boat. So I would agree with Hollis that you have to be careful about, you know, coming in the day you get inaugurated and saying, here's the executive order and I'm going to cut this off and you can no longer do that anymore. But it should be a major concern. You want people that own the permits to have a vested interest, not just a monetary interest and they're living in Kona or something, but a vested interest in how the fishery is managed. You want them to be able to see what's going on in the fishery, and you want them to be showing their crew members here, you know, the right way to do things, and here we go, and that way they're also responsible for it. I said I'd hate to sit here and just agree with Hollis. You have to be very careful that, on how you implement this, but you don't want a permit to become solely like a share of stock that somebody is betting on the come going up or down.
Bill Walker.
You know, I think you do have to be careful. It is a property right. You have to be careful about that. I know there are circumstances, I'm personally aware of some, where some could not fish for a number of years because of medical conditions or whatever, and so they could not. I would hate to be in a situation that because they were not physically capable of working that permit themselves, that they would lose it. Or if they couldn't for whatever reason, they couldn't derive an income from that. So I think it's a careful walk when you're looking at taking something away from somebody that has bought and paid for that in such a way. So. I certainly think you need to have some hands-on, you know, association with what goes on that in the fishing of that permit. But I think we have to be very careful when we're looking at taking something away that somebody has worked hard for.
Governor Parnell.
I think the goal really is to increase opportunities for Alaskans, and especially for our young people. And one way we're doing that is by working with them to increase loan opportunities from the state so that they can buy in to the fisheries. And I'm open to considering more ways to incentivize and bring about those kinds of opportunities.
Bob Poole.
When limited entry was first put in our Constitution, since it's been put in there, there have been 75 suits about it to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. So it's always been a difficult balance. But I think that rationalization has brought a number of benefits. What I'm most concerned with, though, is we tried to balance the idea that you worked hard to get some ownership in that fishery, and that makes sense. But it's also really important that the communities not be disenfranchised from that resource, that you also have to balance that. And I think that's the thing that's most facing Kodiak with crab rationalization, is that a lot of jobs were lost, a lot of incomes were lost. There was a big change in that fishery, and it affected the community most. And that's the balance we have to find, is find ways to make sure that there's a direct link between the community and benefiting the community from that offshore resource.
Ethan Berkowitz, you started.
It's okay. I'm happy to actually correct
right.
The misperception
okay.
amongst
We're
my friends up here.
We're going into the next round here. It appears that we are a little bit ahead of schedule. So we will have another round, if that's all right with you folks. And we will have the question asked by Wes, Wesley Loy, if you're ready, Wes. And the first person to answer that will be Senator Hollis French.
Thanks, Jeff. We've talked a lot about oil tonight, and I hesitate to ask another question on that subject, but this is an important topic. Basically, you know, as a nation, we have watched for the last few weeks really in dismay as oil pours into the Gulf of Mexico. And Alaskans, you know, endured their own oil spill tragedy 21 years ago with the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. State's economy depends hugely on oil production, and Alaska has substantial oil and gas potential in the Arctic Ocean and in Bristol Bay, where we obviously have a lot of fishing resources, and the same can be said about Cook Inlet. What is your perspective on offshore drilling around Alaska in light of what's happened in the Gulf?
The answer is quite simple. You need a strong coastal zone management plan. You've got to have that in place. And it's a long word that basically means local control. I was deeply disturbed to watch the governor this year come to loggerheads with the North Slope borough as they tried and tried and tried to reach a compromise on a coastal zone management plan that everyone could agree to. And that compromise was not reached. And we are still left with basically no local control over multinational corporations making decisions potentially in the Chukchi Sea that will ruin the food security of the people that have lived there for thousands of years. That disturbs me greatly. There was an enormous opportunity at the end of this session to craft a compromise, and I do not believe that the governor put his full faith and effort into coming to a conclusion to that problem. We're left looking for a solution next year. I think the Gulf of Mexico spill shows how imperative it was to reach that conclusion, and I think it's a great question. Thank you.
Ralph Samuels.
Thank you very much. I think that all Americans are pretty horrified by what is going on in the Gulf right now. That being said, in the Arctic, you need to make sure that you have a regulatory environment which locks it down and makes sure it's done correctly. It's an apples and oranges argument to say you've got 150 feet of water versus 5,000 feet of water. It's not there. It's a different argument completely. So I think the state has done a pretty good job of regulating, and you'd want to make extra sure now that if we move forward with this process, that the process can be done safely. But it's an apples and oranges argument to say 5,000 feet of water versus 150 feet of water. Thank you.
Bill Walker.
We're a state that's funded 90% by oil and gas. We have a pipeline that's two-thirds empty and continue to decline. I think what happened in the Gulf Coast is horrific. There's no question about that. I think our focus needs to be on onshore in Alaska at this point. I think we're fighting uphill, thinking that anything is going to be opened offshore in any given future. I think that what's happened in the Gulf Coast should be an indication that we should be onshore. We should be able to develop ANWR. We should put that oil in the pipe, in a pipeline, where we can control it. If we don't. I don't want to be an alarmist, but this is why I'm running for governor, is because we have a false economy. We have an economy based upon assuming there's always going to be a higher price of oil, and it's going to come from somewhere. It's not. It's declining every year. It's not going to come from offshore. Hopefully it will come from ANWR if we have a governor that's willing to fight for that.
Thank you. Governor Parnell.
We already know that the North Aleutians Basin area is off the table for leasing. I do support Cook Inlet offshore efforts there to bring natural gas to our communities there. Senator French mentioned he misconstrued my views on the Coastal Zone Management Program. I support a strong coastal zone management system. I support one where public has huge opportunities for input and influence in the process. I don't support a coastal zone management system where one local community has a veto over the state agency, namely like DEC, in terms of making regulatory choices. I think that a statewide asset deserves a statewide look, with people statewide being held accountable for those choices. So I do support a strong coastal zone management system and will continue to do so.
Bob Pohl.
You know, the state has had offshore oil and gas leasing and production throughout most of its history. Cook Inlet, which was mentioned just a little bit ago, has lots of offshore rigs that safely produce oil every day. You know, the disaster in the Deep Horizon well is breathtaking. And Ralph Samuels is right. It's in a mile of water and then 2 miles below that into the well. The things that are being talked about in the Chukchi are 150, 180 feet. But we would be criminally remiss if we didn't take this time right now to make sure that every precaution that could be taken, should that offshore development move forward, be taken. And it's really critical that we do that now. Honestly, Shell now has the opportunity to do that. But I don't, you know, there's probably a Prudhoe Bay-sized deposit out there. 90% of our state revenue depends on oil and gas.
Ethan Berkowitz.
I spent 3 seasons working in the Antarctic, a good chunk of that aboard ships in the ice. And I'm incredibly skeptical about the ability to clean up anything under ice or in ice. I think that when we talk about offshore development, for this conversation, I'm envisioning Beaufort and Chukchi. We don't have all the precautions in place. We don't have the redundancies in place. We don't have the ability to do spill abatement and spill containment. All that being said, at the same time, this is Memorial Day weekend, and we've got the American military engaged in combat right now, in part over the world's dependence on oil. And that's another kind of tragedy. And when you make a determination about whether to pursue offshore development, I'm personally, there's the conflict, the internal conflict of the environmental risk as opposed to the human tragedy of ongoing combat because of our dependence on foreign oil. We ought to use this in Alaska as a chance to free ourselves from that dependence. We ought to use it as a way to spur gas development, as a way to talk about our onshore prospects. But it is a horribly complex and tragic situation.
Okay, thank you all. And that concludes the official debate portion of our activity this evening. And we will now move into the portion of our activity where each candidate provides 1 minute of closing remarks. Before we go there, I'd like to thank our media panelists, Lainey Welch, Wesley Loy, and Margie Bauman, for their participation and contribution to this. And I thought that we might just, before we go into that, maybe ask the audience for a round of applause for our candidates to give them just a little bit of... Okay, now each candidate will have 1 minute to provide closing remarks, and we will begin with Bob Pohl.
You know, the job of governor is about running the executive branch, and it's about making sure we have an economy where we can build our futures here, where we can build our families' futures here, where your kids can build their futures here. And my background of working for four different governors, multiple parties, in all sorts of different parts of state government, and in working in the private sector, leading projects like leading the state's team to bring the FedEx and UPS cargo hubs to Anchorage, or putting together things like the Alaska Heart Institute, or recently a Pegasus aircraft management deal with NANA. Those are the kinds of things that really do create real, new, long-term jobs in Alaska. And what I think I offer as a gubernatorial candidate is a guy who's run state government, who really understands how to do it, but also knows business. I have a couple degrees in business. I know how to get that done. I'd ask you to take a look at those blue cards. You can find out about my background, or go to bobpoe.com and find out more about me. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Ethan Berkowitz.
I want to begin by thanking the audience, both here and on the radio, who are members of the seafood industry. Thank you for feeding us. Thank you for feeding people of the country and the world. It's hard work. But for particularly those of you here in Alaska, it's a critical part of our identity. And ultimately, you know, what we do is important, but who we are is what matters. And that's a focus I'm going to bring as governor. There was a brass plaque over a chart table on a vessel I served on once that said, a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are meant for. Well, this is Alaska. This is the great land. We can't be timid. We can't be risk-averse, not if we want to be great. And I believe we can be great again. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hollis French.
I said at the outset that I came here to listen and to learn, and I'm committed to doing that. I am committed to finding out more about your industry during the time I have here and on into the future. I worked 13 years in the oil industry, educated my way out of that and into the Alaska State Senate. I've been there for 8 years. I was longer in the oil industry than I've been in the Senate. But during the time I've been there, there's been an enormous change in the politics in Juneau towards bipartisanship,
towards Democrats and Republicans sitting down and working things out. We saw enormous progress on that just this year, on crime, on energy, on transportation, on education. We've made enormous progress, and those are the qualities I will bring to the state as governor, an ability to look past party, look past region, look past identity, and look to good ideas and to bring them to life. I'm passionate about public service. Thanks for your attention tonight, and I'll see you around town tomorrow and the next day.
Thank you. Ralph Samuels.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks to the chamber and all the sponsors and the audience who sit listen to a bunch of wannabe politicians here tonight. We appreciate your time. I am a better businessman than I am a politician. I'm going to be the first to admit that. I am a pretty much of a private sector guy. You know, and I will make a couple of promises to you tonight. If you ask me a question, I won't dodge it. I will tell you what I think. I won't tell you what you want to hear. I won't shy away from the tough decisions that are coming up. We talked probably way more than I thought we were going to talk about the oil industry tonight. But, you know, we cannot get away from the fact that oil pays all the bills, all the harbors, all the schools, all the roads, all the troopers, all of these things. And as the oil declines, we as Alaskans need to be willing to make some tough decisions, and we'll need a governor who is willing to lead us and make tough decisions and not shy away from them. Thank you very much for your time, and I will also see you in the next couple of days.
Bill Walker.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. It is a pleasure to be back in Kodiak, and it's nice to see faces I haven't seen for a while and look forward to more time here. I'm not a politician. I'm not looking for a job. I'm not looking to launch a political career. I'm scared to death about where our state is headed because it's politics as usual. It's based upon what's going to be best interest of being reelected and reelected and reelected. I'm not running for reelection. I am running to take control of this state and do what the state was intended to do, that we make the decision about this state in our state, not in the boardrooms of Calgary and London and Houston. We have ceded control of the future of our state over to multinational companies that have competing projects all over the world. I'm horrified at what I see being done elsewhere in the world by the very same companies. I don't fault them at all. They're wonderful. They do a great job. I fault us that we have stepped away. We've taken the eye off the ball. We've said, we can't do it. You do it for us. You make the decision, and we hope it's going to be in our best interest. It's not. We have to take control of our own future. We need to take control now. We need a governor that's going to stand up and represent the people and not represent politics as usual. That's why I'm running for governor.
Thank you. Governor Sean Parnell.
Thank you. I said at the beginning, I'm running because I love Alaska and I love Alaskans. It's about creating jobs and opportunities for our families. It's about leading in a way that creates more of a future for us and for our children and grandchildren. And we do that in a couple ways. As governor, I've done it by leading on merit scholarships. I've done it by addressing the erosion of our homes and domestic violence and sexual assault. I've done it by working to ensure the sustainability of our fisheries and to make sure that our coastal communities are thriving. My hope is that at the end of the day, you will know that this really is about you and about us as Alaskans, that we will seize the promise of Alaska, that we will seize that opportunity that is ours as a people, and that it will be here for future generations as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was passed a note that we must go to 8:59, and it's 8:52. And our very loyal timer here offered earlier, if we had some time, that he would sing La Donna Mobile from Rigoletto. But are you still ready to do that? Okay. So I'm wondering, Lainey, what would be your suggestion as to how we proceed with the next 7 minutes?
I think you could... How about a few more of your factoids, and then you can remind the audience that they're invited to remain for a half hour, and then we can sign off.
Good. Well, I will first, why don't we thank our sponsors again? How's that? We have the Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers. We have Trident Seafoods. We have the Alaska Scallop Association, the Marine Conservation Alliance, the Kodiak Island Borough, and, of course, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce. So we'd like to thank those folks for their contribution and support. I'll just go through a couple of these factoids, and I apologize that some of them are from 2007. I was not able to get the document that had the latest. But Alaska has 8 of the 20 largest seafood ports in the nation. That's based on ex-vessel value of product. That's a good indicator of the importance and the size of the seafood industry to the state of Alaska. The Alaska seafood industry is not only an integral part of our social and cultural identity as Alaskans, but it's also a vital economic engine for the future of our state, which you candidates have all stated in one time or another in your conversation here this evening. There's three pieces here that go together that talk a little bit about the value of Alaskan seafood. What? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have another idea, Jeff. Sorry to interrupt
you.
But I'd quickly like to ask the candidates, what's your favorite fish?
Yeah, good idea.
Senator French?
It's the king salmon that my wife makes.
Good answer.
Mm-hmm. What was that? I'm sorry.
Red salmon that my wife makes.
White king salmon and also a teriyaki black cod.
Anything I've caught. And there's not a lot of that.
While we have everybody's attention here, when we conclude, we have a segment here which is new to the debate this year, and it's called From the Frying Pan into the Fire. And it's a new feature of our debate. And after we sign off, we will have an open microphone, and folks are invited to come to the mics and ask a candidate of your choice a question of your choice. And as we know, we want to follow the polite decorum that Kodiak is known for, and we want you to please make sure that you use your time to ask a question and not make a long statement. But we're here to ask questions, so try to keep your questions to about 15 seconds when we get to that segment. And we will then ask the candidates to limit their answers to about 1 minute. Isn't that what we decided, Lainey? Okay.
I think we can sign off.
And it's 8:55.
I think we can sign off.
Can we sign off?
Sure.
Okay.
We can get going.
All right, well, good. How about one more applause for the candidates here? So that's it for the fishing debate. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jeff Stevens, signing off in Kodiak and handing it off to APRN. Thank you.